think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 255 of Low Limit Football on this 23rd of September, 2019. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we start off by wishing my younger daughter, Julia, a happy 13th birthday. Now I have two teenagers in the household. Woe is me. Lionel Messi wins his sixth FIFA Men's Player of the Year award, the most ever. Liverpool and Inter are entered the week perfect, but with Champions League and league matches at hand, especially tough ones for both teams, did they survive the week perfect? We're going to let you know. The Madrid Derby is right around the corner. We're going to preview the big match coming up on Saturday. And VAR rears its ugly head in the Napoli-Liverpool matchup on the Champions League this past week. We're going to discuss what happened and more with our very special guest, Amadi Thiam from Gilded Edge Soccer Marketing, that is going to be joining us in just a little bit. My co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas, get yourself in here, my man. How are you?
Very well, Joe. Very well. And probably better that I don't have to deal with a undergraduate degree, since I already have it, in comparison to what Antonio Brown is going to do now in the next few months.
Man, what a disaster. How do you go through three teams in like 4 months and just totally piss off the NFL? I mean, he's at the point where Colin Kaepernick is looking at him like, damn, you really did a good job on this one. I mean, Antonio Brown has pretty much ostracized him, right? Himself.
Yeah, he said that he's never going to play in the NFL anymore. So I guess he's going to go and do something.
I'll be honest with you. Antonio Brown says he's never going to play in the NFL, but I don't think it's by his choice, you know. But obviously, we've gotten a little sideways here with the NFL discussion. My Cowboys are 3-0. And, you know, maybe we should get back to soccer real quick. My friend, I have trivia tonight.
Yes, you do.
I think I've got a decent one. And my question comes from the folks at Gilt Edge Soccer Marketing and information provided by Sports Endeavors. They just popped a tweet out. I want to say this tweet happened. Hang on a second. I'll give you an idea. So you can't go searching for it, Rob. this happened September 12th. They posted this tweet. So you can't go back and look. No cheating.
Gotcha.
And they got based on information of the sales window from February 1st to August 7th, the top 10 selling jerseys in the United States.
Okay.
Can you give them all to me? Now, the problem here is going to be that there's some nationalities or some teams that have multiple jerseys. Okay, so they have a home, they have an away, maybe even a third. So you're going to get teams repeated, but there are 10. They gave us the top 10 highest-selling jerseys from February 1st to August 7th. Can you give me the 10 jerseys?
All right, so let me – the 10 specific jerseys?
Yeah, like Juve away, Barca home – pick one.
Well,
Chelsea
let me ask
third.
Let me ask you this then, just to make it more a little bit better. Mm-hmm. How many teams are repeated in the top 10?
Let me look real quick at the graphic. I've got one. I've got technically two.
Two teams.
Okay.
All right. So we'll give you that at the end of the show. Let's get an opening thoughts. And opening thoughts really kind of broke late last week, Rob, right? And that was the news that Inter Miami, who are, have not hit the pitch yet, right? They're still a fledgling team. They haven't played anything. That nothing's going on with them yet. Inter Miami are set to sign Manchester City star David Silva. This has come out from a report earlier in the week that Silva, 33 years old, is getting ready to leave Manchester City and then at the end of the season and then join Inter Miami on their opening season with MLS. I wanted to get your thoughts on this, Rob. I don't know that this has been confirmed. This report has been confirmed as of yet. In fact, you know, like with all reports that are not completely confirmed, we've got the denials coming from everybody and their grandmother. But I want your thoughts on David Silva leaving Manchester City, especially leaving Manchester City where he is right now, where he's a prominent player on their starting 11, coming to Inter Miami, a team that is, you know, obviously haven't even hit the pitch yet, and also a team that I want to look at this aspect of it, Rob, a team that is going to fight for eyeballs in the Miami market, given Miami's sports market in general. Which is, and we've had repeated people tell us this, whether it be Phil Shane, you know, we've had a few others. The Miami sports market is difficult at best because the weather's really nice. So, you know, what are your thoughts on David Silva coming here and this possibly happening?
I can understand why, if it's either the decision of both from either Miami or Silva's case, mm-hmm. to come here, as you said, you know, it's nice weather, you're in Miami, you're surrounded by, quite frankly, one of the most diverse communities in all of the United States. But at the same time, if you're looking at it more of a personal level, is this really the player that you want to start off a new team, especially in a city like Miami? That I would understand the appreciation they probably have with Manchester City and Spanish players and all that, but he's not the name that comes out as the one that might be the franchise player of a new club, especially in a city like Miami. So looking at the report, I mean, talented player. I mean, we have to, as you said in the beginning, that he is really, really important for this Manchester City side that is contending for everything. And, you know, he is a proven winner. He's won almost everything you can imagine at Manchester City. He's won everything you can imagine at Spain as well. So you get a clear winner here for sure. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if MLS is going to, you know, we've had this discussion ad nauseum for various years, Joe. I mean, if it's going to continue to market itself, are we really going to look at a 33-year-old David Silva as the one that's going to stand out and be that player to market, you know, a new soccer base? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I respect him. I think he's one of the best midfielders in the world, maybe one of the best Premier League midfielders ever. You know, he has his history, everything. You could say everything you want about his products, but I just don't see him being the player that he is now, mm-hmm. trying to market a new team and try to bring in attention. I just don't see it. I think he's the player for it.
And I'm completely with you on this one. You know, and again, we talk about the plot. It's a couple of facts here. He has already said that he is going to leave Manchester once his contract is expired, which is this coming summer. And mm-hmm. he would not stay in the Premier League. So he is going to leave England. But, you know, him saying that means he could be going to Italy, could be going to Spain, could be going mm-hmm. to France. I mean, there's so many other landing spots for David Silva. I agree with you on the other side. And you know, you and I, we kind of thought this before. We've confirmed it with one Andrea Yanez, who we've had on the show before, who's based in Miami. So she's well aware of the Miami sports scene. So she's definitely one that is good to go to with this kind of question. And she basically said, you know, David Silva doesn't turn heads. Do you know what I mean? He's not big enough. And this is where I got to with the Miami sports scene. It's a very, very competitive market because there is so much other stuff to do in Miami in general year round that to compete for the eyeballs, you really need something special. And you know, case in point, we go back to the NBA. You know, what did Miami have to do to really turn eyeballs for the Miami Heat? LeBron James, the biggest, mm-hmm. you know, the biggest star of them all. what started to turn eyeballs is Derek Jeter coming out and owning the Marlins, although that has really kind of failed at this point as well. It doesn't, you know, because Derek Jeter's not on the pitch. But Derek Jeter, the name, started to turn heads a little bit. You know, you're even talking about the Florida Panthers, who are right there in Sunrise. They don't really turn heads either, and they had a guy like Roberto Luongo, who's possibly a Hockey Hall of Famer, and a team that has been successful at times. So you have, you know, a lot of competition in the Miami sports market. You have a lot of competition in the Miami eyeball market. And David Silva, although, like you and I have agreed, is certainly a great player, a fantastic player, creative, intelligent. You know, there are all kinds of superlatives we can use for this guy. He's just not the kind that turns heads. Now, in this report, which I'm reading from MLS.com, the Inter Miami, the group, has also been linked to, obviously, Lionel Messi. Now, that would turn a head. Of course. I mean, greatest player, one of the greatest players of all time. You can have the argument. Luis Suarez, I think might turn ahead. Cavani, Edson Cavani has also been connected there. I don't know that Cavani, Rob, turns the heads like Suarez does. Okay. Unfortunately, and these are two countrymen. So they're, you know, they're teammates on the international level. So I don't think anybody turns the heads like Suarez does in comparison to Cavani. But, you know, is there a name, Rob, aside from the absolutely ridiculously obvious ones, Messi, Ronaldo, right? Neymar, you know, that I think is a ridiculous one as well, as I mentioned. Is there a name that you think might turn heads in the Miami market that I would say like would be realistic to go there within the next 2 or 3 years?
Oh, it's funny you actually say Messi, because, you know, his contract technically does expire. Mm. As we had that conversation with Samuel Hunter, it technically does expire in 2021. So there is that. I mean, and looking at other names, maybe just because of the community that's there, the big Colombian community, I think a name like James Rodriguez would be great in the Miami scene. I think a player like him, maybe a player like, you know, this probably won't happen, but what about, you know, you go back to Manchester City, what about a player like Sergio Aguero? You know, his contract is going to expire in 2 years as well.
Yeah.
Why not a player like him?
I think that name would turn more heads than David Silva. I do. I agree. I was also thinking, you know, to a lesser extent, if you want to look at the same level as Silva, I would say, given, like you said, the Colombian community down there, which absolutely exists, is even a guy like Juan Cuadrado. But I would say to you, a guy that could move immediately or potentially move immediately or in time for this particular project to get off the ground, Radamel Falcao.
Yeah, but I think with the move to Turkey, that proved to be a bit difficult. Yeah. But had he not happened, I think he would have been another name as well.
I think it would have been shoo-in. And let me ask you, you know, in my opinion, I think a guy like Radamel Falcao, given the community down there, I think Falcao actually turns more heads than David Silva, don't you think?
For sure.
Okay, yeah. I just wouldn't want to think I'm off base there. But these are the kinds of names I think that they go after. I think at this point right now, the biggest name they have available to them is a guy that's not going to put the boots back on, and that's David Beckham.
Right. And I think with someone like him that has – I mean, let's be real. I mean, you know, we talk about – you were talking about Messi and Ronaldo, but Beckham is probably up there as maybe the most recognized player in football ever.
Oh, sure.
He's up there. He has to be up there. If he's not, he's definitely in the top three. I mean, you know, respect to Pele, Maradona, Ronaldo, Messi, all that. But he's up there. So you'd think that with the clout that he has and the power, he can convince anyone to come here to Miami.
And, you know, and I want to take it one step further with Beckham, because, you know, you remember this project has not been like 6 months in the making. This has been 4 or 5 years in the making now. You know, but with all the trouble they've had with the stadium and everything else, you know, expansion, there's been loads of roadblocks left and right. I think if they got this project off the ground 3 or 4 years ago, you could have very well potentially seen maybe an owner player for a season, David Beckham, to put some butts in seats. Do you know what I mean? Until they got off the ground and they were able to attract that other name. I think that ship has sailed for sure. And I think right now that, you know, the best bet they can do is they can look at the community at hand, almost like what Orlando City did with a large Brazilian community. Who do they go? They go out and get Kaká, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, massive, massive name for them. And I think that's the kind of thing to do. They need to look at the community at hand and tie in with a name that would recognize, that would relate to that community. And I think that would be the case. I mean,
I'll interrupt here real quick, Joe, but just looking at the last census reports, Miami, the Latino population in Miami accounts for 70% of its total population, 34% being Cuban, 15.8% having some sort of Central American background, and 8% of a South American descent.
Okay, so you're looking at a small – you're looking at two issues here. You're looking at a small component, right, that is South American. So although you bring in somebody like a Colombian, which they do have a decent Colombian community, might not turn as many heads as you would think. The next level you said was Central America. I mean, the only name that I could think of that would be big, that would be worth any quality, but probably would not translate at this point, would be Keylor Navas.
Right, but you already know what happened to him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he goes to PSG. Well, but even again, then, a goalkeeper,
Joe, even then, it's still those that community still. I mean, these are worldwide names anyway. I mean, if you get these type of players, we get like a James Rodriguez.
Yeah,
you know, that's going to still be a big name in the contest of not just the Colombian community, but everyone that's
right.
a soccer fan.
It becomes a Latin American thing where you kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, lump it all into one. Then a name like James. Now the question is James, what is he, 27, 28, am I right? Or he's right in that ballpark if you want to check it. You know, when do you bring James Rodriguez in?
28.
So you bring, let's be honest, Rob, you bring a guy like James Rodriguez in now, today, massive move, player in his prime. You know, I don't want to say world class, but pretty damn close to world class.
I think so.
I was gonna say, I know he would be on the line. I know people.
I think
would
if
argue
he was
that.
On more on form, you would more argue on that extent. But I just think he's not on the form that he used to be. Maybe I can understand why you don't.
Let's call him upper level.
Oh yeah, for sure. Definitely a top tier.
Okay, right, and I think it would be a better move than David Silva.
For sure.
Yeah. So I think that might be. But again, James Rodriguez, at a 28-year-old Colombian superstar, right, is going to come with a massive price tag. That's going to be the long and short of it. And
I'm sure Beckham has a couple bucks in his pocket to give some money to him.
Will MLS let him spend that money? That becomes the next question. So, I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces when you bring a player into MLS as opposed to, you know, him going from
leaving too.
right. So that becomes a whole nother podcast, you know, to go through that one. So, so we'll wait and see. I believe Inter Miami set to start the season next year, in 2020 with MLS. And we'll see if David Silva does come, and if he does come, what he brings, and if Beckham is done making big moves, or if we see other potential players coming in to bolster their ranks for sure. So let's table that for a moment, and let's move on to our guest. Now, you and I had the pleasure of recording with Amedy just after the completion of the second day of the Champions League matches. So some of the material might seem old, but at the same time, it was what was fresh at the moment, which I think is great, because now we can look back on match day one of Champions League and really get a fresh perspective of it. And what I really loved was the fact that we kind of got into the whole controversy with Napoli versus Liverpool with the penalty call, the VAR, all of that stuff. So we got a chance to talk about that as well. So without further ado, our interview with Amedy Thiam from Gilt Edge Soccer. Joining us now on Low Limit Football from Gilt Edge Soccer Marketing, it's Amedy Thiam. Amedy, how are you? Welcome back to the show.
I'm really doing really well, guys. Thanks for having me on again. Really excited to get talking.
Yeah, fantastic to catch up with you again. I want to start off with obviously we're going to talk Champions League tonight, and I want to talk about the Napoli-Liverpool match from the other day, from Tuesday. You know, the big controversy, the big talking point surrounding this match right now to start was the controversial call of the penalty on Robertson, where he quote-unquote trips Jose Callejon in the box late in the match, leads to the penalty kick, the first goal. Napoli, of course, score a second one after a kind of a mishap in the back under Liverpool. But I want to talk about the penalty itself to start. Rob and I have reviewed this play over and over and over again. For me, based on one of the views that I see, I would call it a penalty. I think that penalty happens. And I talked to Connor Dunford, who you know, is another journalist, and he said that if you feel like that's a penalty in the middle of the pitch, then it's a penalty everywhere on the pitch. So I think, for me, I feel like that's a penalty. Rob seems to be more of the maybe, and I can see where that would be the case as well, because it looks like a little bit of a dive, a little more embellished than you would normally see. But I do believe that for me, because there's definite contact there, and Robertson does impede Callejon's path a little bit, that I felt like it was a penalty when I saw it happen. There was a VAR check, but I guess there's also controversy surrounding VAR. So I want to go to your thoughts on the penalty and your thoughts on the use of VAR for reviewing that replay.
Well, first on the penalty, I was kind of a mixed feeling when I first saw it. So until I saw the view from behind, that is to say, when you can see, you're looking up the pitch towards the goal and you see Callejon come from right to left. In that image, you can see that, yes, Robertson goes to make a tackle and misses the ball and also misses the man with that initial effort. But simply by making that challenge, he puts himself in Callejon's path, and the contact following it where they knock knees is what I would consider a foul. And going off that other, you know, off of what your colleague had mentioned, if it's a foul anywhere else on the pitch, it's a foul there. I would agree, because I think that would have been whistled for. As far as VAR, I think that in these sorts of instances, despite the fact that VAR is there to help make sure that this is cleared up and to give us the view with the most clarity, this is one of those sorts of calls that would always be debated regardless of VAR. And I think that the referee looking at this would probably be in two minds. You know, it's tough to, you know, in that sense, VAR is almost null because it still requires the person to make a decision. And I really don't know that it's helpful in that instance. And again, I do believe VAR is meant exactly for these sorts of questionable calls. And it's kind of interesting that it's not necessarily foolproof.
Let me ask you this, though, you know, as a follow-up. If the referee never went to the on-field screen to look at this play for himself, would you feel better about the call either way if the referee just made that, even if it was an empty gesture? Would you feel better about the referee going over to the screen, looking at it, and then coming back and making the box signal and all that good stuff?
Personally, no. I don't think it makes a difference. Honestly, if you believe in the system, you have to believe that he's being talked to in his earpiece and that someone is checking that, regardless of whether he makes the walk over. However, for the good of fans and the good of the neutral viewer, seeing the referee physically go check it on screen, on camera, kind of gives it more legitimacy, if you will. But personally, I don't think it makes that much of a difference.
So, Albany, I guess we'll just jump in real quick and talk about one of the games. And obviously, we'll start out with your beloved Chelsea, who, you know, didn't go on to the right start in the Champions League, losing 1-0 to Valencia. Penalty from Rodrigo, but also another penalty was prominent when Ross Barkley missed his. But, you know, one of the big issues, I think, with this Chelsea side is obviously the injury of Mason Mount, seeing how, you know, the controversial that play was. And also, I think, as well as the lack of recently of Christian Pulisic. So I just want your take and I guess your impressions following the results so far for Chelsea as they get ready for their big clash against Liverpool in the Premier League this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday was a frustrating loss. It was definitely not the way I thought it would go after watching, I guess, the first 75 minutes. However, there was always this sort of, you know, nagging suspicion, and you could hear it in the crowd or the lack thereof at certain points, this nervousness about, you know, can they pull this out? And I think Mason Mount, the injury really kind of turned everyone's sort of perspective on it, because as much as he wasn't necessarily too prominent at that point in the game, Chelsea fans have sort of built a faith in him that he'll have one or two opportunities to change the game. And when he was replaced by Pedro, we sort of lost a bit of a step, and it took Pedro about a half hour, maybe 40 minutes to really get into the game. And there were opportunities, but it just sort of felt like one of those nights where, you know, nothing was going in and we were just a step slow. But I do like the fact that Lampard has shown a versatility. He's gone to a switch at the back three to give the defense more stability, because Chelsea have been leaking goals. And I feel like as much as this season is definitely a work in progress, there are steps in the right direction. And this loss is a hiccup, and it's going to look bad and feel bad. It'll leave a bad taste in the mouth for many Chelsea fans. But it's just another step on the way to this team becoming the finished article, which they are not currently.
Yeah, of course. And I think with any team that's kind of in a redemption mode, as you would say, or rebuilding process, it will take time. You know, especially for a club like Chelsea, who have been so accustomed to winning, perhaps the fans are not, you know, ready for it at this moment. But I think it comes with time and progress. So let's hope that they do go into the right step moving forward. Another result that became one of the shocks here, or if we can even say that, was the result against PSG against Real Madrid. Obviously, we saw that result today from a Di Maria brace. And really, it seems as if though Zinedine Zidane is kind of still struggling with trying to find this team properly. You know, he comes in after what really was a turbulent season for Real Madrid last season. And now coming in, and where, you know, they did start off on the right track, you would say. But, you know, this is not the result that they want if they do want to progress into the round of 16. Isn't it, Amadi?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's interesting to say it, but Real definitely feels a bit like Chelsea. Hazard left one team who were going to be going into a very, very strong rebuilding mode and kind of joined another one doing the exact same thing. And I feel like people expected Real to sort of hit the ground running with the addition of Hazard and Jovic and figured they'd have enough firepower. But where I think they really lack quality is in the midfield. And the way that Idrissa Gueye today just absolutely bossed it with Verratti, they look, you know, like a strong pairing. And Gueye only joined this season. So it's interesting to see how quickly they've kind of meshed whereas for Real, Cruz and Casemiro really struggled today. And it's also worth noting, I think, that when Zidane returned, people kind of expected he'd right the ship. You know, he brought them so much success in such a quick time when he was last there that it was probably an afterthought for many fans to think, hey, well, Zizou's coming back, we're all set. You know, Hazard will hit the ground running, that's his idol, and we'll be all good. But there definitely is a sense of, you know, unsurety, a lack of, you know, quality on the ball that you don't expect from Real Madrid, you know, especially in the European Cup.
You know, you bring up a great point. I was surprised to see Real Madrid not get any shots on goal in this match. It's really a 180 from maybe a couple of years ago, or the last time even Zidane was in the Champions League, that they've struggled so much. I heard somebody ask this question. I'm going to pose it to you. Their next match, I believe, is October 1st against Club Brugge. I could be wrong on that, but it is. October 1st against Club Brugge. Is Zinedine Zidane still the head coach come October 1st?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, I think it'd be rash to let go of him so early. I think that there are a lot of things happening behind the scenes, particularly with his kind of player management and those who he's choosing to favor. Bale is a great example, but yet somehow Bale, and he scored today, but I think it was called back. He's somehow performing for them when he's least wanted, and it's interesting to see that. However, I don't think Zidane, I think he's got a little bit more of a rope to finish one more transfer window to really have them assess what he's, you know, what he's capable of this season. And to bring him back only to let him go within 6 months, it would be really rash, I think.
I want to jump into a match that might not have gotten a lot of attention, but I think got a little more attention here in the United States because of coaching purposes. And that was Salzburg's 6-2 win over Genk on Tuesday. Jesse March, the first American coach to win a Champions League match in that match. You consider the path that Jesse's taken, going from New York Red Bull, winning the Supporters Shield, going over as an assistant to RB Leipzig, really in the Red Bull system at this point from his time in New York, now goes over to take over Salzburg and has this massive victory in his first appearance in the Champions League. What do you think of the pathway that Jesse Marsh has kind of created for the American coach, or the next batch of American coaches, to possibly make that next move into the coaching ladder and become, you know, moving us towards more like the Italian coaches, more like the Argentinian coaches, and those great coaching tribes that you see around the world?
I think it's definitely interesting to see his path of progression. He, I remember when he was at Red Bulls and he had this, you know, a very clear philosophy. He was a really good man manager. His players would kill out there for him. Mm-hmm. And when he went over as an assistant coach, many people were saying, oh, that's a step backwards. You know, he could be head coach of many teams in MLS. But I think that was maybe the smartest move he's made. being able to see things from behind the scenes and also be an influential voice in the dressing room while not necessarily making all of the decisions allows him, or allowed him rather, to sort of add another skill to his locker. And it's something that I think many people don't value, is the ability to watch a good coach and take notes, find out what you can use, what you can't. And for him, that was almost his rebuilding year, his sort of, I'm going to take a step back here and learn for a bit. And I think that put him on a different path. And, yeah, there have been other coaches to go abroad. Bob Bradley is a good example. And I think that maybe people are seeing Jesse Marsh's success and attributing it to the fact that, oh, he's not at a top six club, and, you know, that, you know, in Europe, or a top 10 club in Europe, rather, he couldn't go to the Premier League. I don't think that's the case. I think that he's developed, as I said, a philosophy that works for him, and his belief in youth players and players, you know, to prove themselves from the academy has proven some success. For example, that Haaland, who had a hat trick yesterday, he's only, I think, 19 years old.
Right.
And there's a sense that he understands how to get the best out of his players and will give them a chance. And it's almost reminiscent of Frank Lampard. Granted, he has a little bit less choice about who he's playing. But the belief in youth players isn't just a fickle one. It's one where, you know, if you can harness that, a youth player will really give 110%, not only because of youthful exuberance, but because of the faith being given them from their manager. So I think Jesse Marsh is a good example for American coaches, but I don't think he should be the outlier. I think that people should follow his path and kind of look at where he decided to put his development first. And that, I think, is really important.
And I think you bring up a great point in a couple of spots. One, his time that he spent over at RB Leipzig is almost like an on-the-job sabbatical, if there is one like that, where you almost look at it as a step back becoming an assistant coach. But really, what he's done is he's kind of gone back to school, you know, to get his master's degree. And Leipzig is, you know, and not only that, Leipzig's one of those teams that does very well with youth. I mean, we talk about Timo Werner. We've talked about Naby Keita in the past. You know, young players, young attacking players, nice players. And now he goes over to Salzburg after coming off of his quote-unquote sabbatical and then applying it to the youth players there at Salzburg, I think is a great point. And it kind of combines everything you said, where he's good with young players. He can motivate them. We've seen him motivate here at Red Bull in New York. And then learning, like, that next level of it at Leipzig, and then going on to Salzburg to apply that trade. I agree with you. I think a lot of the young coaches that we see here in the United States might be wise to follow his path, whether it be, like, let's say, you know, getting through the NYCFC, you know, program and then moving over to Manchester City. You know, you've got the Leipzig Red Bull path as well. There's a few pathways that I think that a player could or a coach could take to kind of break through, not necessarily the way Bob Bradley did, but certainly in the way that Jesse Marsh certainly has. I want to bring up one last match before we let you go, and that was the Atleti Madrid-Juve match from earlier. A 2-2 draw. Atleti scores two goals to tie it up late. For me, as a Juventino, this is a mix of both worlds. And I said this to Rob. If you told me this morning when I woke up that Juve was going to come away with a draw with all the injuries they had, going to play at the Wanda Metropolitano, I would have expected one for that draw to be 0-0, and I would have been kind of happy with that. The fact that Juve gets two goals is a big bonus for me, but I'm mixed because they had a 2-0 lead and they couldn't hold on to it again. And it's something that we've seen out of them in Champions League in past seasons, especially with a team. There was, you know, they're losing on set pieces, they're losing in the air, and you'd expect a team like Bonucci, De Ligt, Cristiano Ronaldo, you'd expect them to be good enough in the air to be able to manage that. But again, they drop points. But on the other hand, you've got to think they're happy. Where would you stand from the Atleti viewpoint on this particular matchup and the Juve matchup or the viewpoint? What would you think of this matchup for both teams?
Honestly, I thought the same when I was going into this. I thought Juve's injuries would be an issue. I thought they would have to shuffle some players around. But look where they got their goals from. I mean, obviously, Cuadrado's was a special finish, but he does kind of provide that wonder goal every once in a while, but I wasn't expecting him to get on the score sheet today. Mm-hmm. But Matuidi, him and popping up where he did to finish, he's such a versatile player, and I guess I didn't give him credit, or enough credit, rather, because I wouldn't have expected him to be on the sheet. But for Juve to go up two goals and to be able to do that at the Wanda Metropolitano was a shock for me. As a neutral, I didn't expect this match to be so high scoring. I didn't think it would. You know, Atleti plays for that 1-0 a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I kind of expect from Simeone for his team to dig in, even if they're at home and grind out a 1-0 win. But also, if you look at the way that Atleti scored their goals, it wasn't, you know, the typical Atleti. I would say because of João Félix and Diego Costa up front, they've created this attacking flair and a style that you expect them to hit on the counter, and Felix almost did. But that to get the drawing goal, the goal from Hector Herrera, off of a set piece was just so Atletico Madrid. So for me, it kind of fit the bill. It was a great match for a neutral, and I was a bit surprised that Ronaldo didn't finish that at the end to make it 3-2.
Yeah.
But, you know, it really had it all. It was a good match.
The conversation's totally different if he does finish it, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And then we're looking at, you know, why didn't Atleti play a more offensive style? They're at home. Why this? Why that? And maybe some of those issues that we spoke about before are more glaring. But, you know, for him, I'm sure he'll be thinking about that for a long time. Obviously, he wants to score in every match. But with a chance to win it just after Herrera brought life back into Atleti, it would have been a real crowd silencer for sure.
Yeah, last point to make on this match. If somebody would have told you that this match would have been 0-0, you'd have been like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. You know, Cholo Simeone on one end, Juve classic defense on the other end. Yeah, I get that. But we see four goals in this match, and then we go to the Barca-Dortmund match, which you would have expected the scoreboard to break, and that one was 0-0. And it just goes to show you the Champions League is just... It's only match day one, but it is certainly an entertaining match day one, don't you think?
Oh, for sure. And the Champions League guarantees that. I mean, this is, whether it is a 0-0 match or a 2-2 or a 4-4, you always sort of end up getting these exciting matches with tons of narrative and just the different styles from teams from different leagues, meshing or not meshing for that matter. Mm-hmm. It always provides something that you don't expect. And I think that the best example would be the Dortmund and Barca 0-0. No one thought that was going to be a 0-0 match, but here we are. Two teams who play often more defensively, as you noted, Atletico and Juventus put up four goals. It's just, you know, the Champions League itself is, it's always a great tournament, but you can never write these sorts of stories. It's always a different thing, and every single game sort of has that, you know, you're on the edge of your seat, they're always poised, it's a fantastic matchup no matter where you look, and it's super exciting, so yeah. I'm really happy it's back.
Like they say, welcome to the show, right?
So, yes.
Amedy, I want to thank you for coming on the show and joining us tonight and helping us talk about match day one of the Champions League. Really appreciate it. It's been way too long, and we've definitely got to get together again soon.
Yes, it's my pleasure. I'd love to come back on again to talk about some more Champions League or anything else for that matter. But I really appreciate you bringing me on, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the season.
Great stuff. Thanks again, man.
All right, bye. Bye.
And that was Amedy Thiam from Gilt Edge Soccer. Great to catch up with him and talk Champions League. And like you'd said, it's been too long, and hopefully we'll have him back again very soon. Rob, I want to kind of follow up on the heels of our discussion there. You know, we talked a little bit about Zinedine Zidane and the precariousness of his job right now. Amedy seemed to think that he would at least survive another transfer window. So we're talking he's going to be around, you know, well past February. But with the struggles that they've had in La Liga so far this season, you also go back and look on the weekend, midweek at the Champions League and you know, dropping that match as well. You start to wonder about Zidane and the potential of them making a move sooner than later. You know, you and I have said it a million times that we live in kind of a what have you done for me now world, especially in world football, where it seems like you can get sacked at the drop of a hat. So, you know, let's start to look forward now at the Madrid derby coming up this weekend, because obviously this is a massive, massive match for both. You know, it's basically to rule Madrid. And we look at the two teams. Atleti just really have had a quote-unquote poor run of form, I guess you want to call it that way, Rob, dropping points in their last two matches in league, losing to Sociedad, and then also drawing Celta Vigo. Obviously, the comeback win against Juventus in Champions League was a massive boost for them, you know, confidence-wise, but you go and you turn the page and you go to Real Madrid. Real Madrid have actually ascended to basically the top of the La Liga standings. They've won their last two matches, beating Sevilla on the road, which is, you know, no easy feat at all. Prior to that, beating Levante as well. They are, you know, somewhat pointed in the right direction at this point. moving forward five matches into La Liga. But again, the 3-0 loss to PSG, you know, obviously sends shockwaves through Real Madrid. This is Real Madrid's competition. This is the one they always want to win. So, you know, on the surface, what are your thoughts leading into this massive matchup, especially with two teams appearing to be on the same, you know, going in opposite directions, but it's really Real Madrid ascending and Atleti descending in La Liga?
Yeah, I don't think in terms of Zidane's job security it's at risk. I think it's stupid early to think about him possibly getting sacked. I mean, well, what, a few weeks into the season, people are already thinking about asking for his head? No. I think that eventually it will fall into place for Real Madrid. And like you said, Joe, you know, they're tied with Bilbao for the top of La Liga, even though they did lose the champion, their game against PSG, which probably was their hardest one that they're going to have. So you think about them getting that hardest game out of the way and now going to all the other games with a different mentality. So I think maybe for Atleti, there's a bit more pressure, especially considering that, one, they're in sixth and that there's three other teams ahead of them with Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. So you probably have to give more pressure to them, actually. But at the same time, I think it's just too early to start thinking about what could happen in terms of must win. I think the one that we all have to be worried about, I think now, is Barcelona. I think after the loss this weekend over Granada, you know, some alarm bells probably are ringing over there in Barcelona, because to be in eighth place with only 7 points and you know, it's still a small gap, you would say 4 points. Mm-hmm. That does not look good for a team that is, let's put it this way, Joe, going for a treble every season.
No, I agree. I agree completely. But this, you know, and I know it's early in the season, but this is one of those matches for both sides, for Atleti and for Real, that they circle on the calendar, right? I mean, this is one that both teams want to win. And it's going to be interesting because, like we had said, you know, for the most part, Real Madrid stumbled to get through. I mean, obviously, the injuries have played their part, no doubt about it. But I think when you look at the last encounter, although it was a quote-unquote friendly, this was the Atleti team that pasted 7 onto Real Madrid back here at MetLife Stadium during the International Champions Cup. You go back and look at some of these results. La Liga, the last 3 La Liga matches, all see either Real Madrid winning or draws in this one. And in fact, the last time they were at the Wanda Metropolitano, it was Real Madrid with a 3-1 victory back in February 19th. So, you know, there's something on the plate here for Simeone, don't you think, that he's almost a little bit of revenge, especially in La Liga? I know he got his good laugh at the International Champions Cup, but that is more of an exhibition, not something of real worth for them. So this is really the last sour taste in their mouth. And I've got to say, do you think there's more on the plate for Atleti, especially given their trend, you know, with dropping points in the last 2 matches? Or do you think there's more on the plate for Real Madrid wanting to be basically the kings of Madrid?
No, I think there's more for Real Madrid, really, because they always come into that kind of mentality to win. I think with Atleti, you know, they have ambitions to win stuff, to win trophies, you know, to win La Liga. I think many people have put them as the favorites to win it. The Champions League, they're a couple tiers below a lot of teams, actually. So you have to give that pressure more to Real Madrid. I mean, you know, it's not a good impression when you're off to a start that does not seem plausible to view at in the Champions League and La Liga. So yeah, there's more to Real Madrid. I think for Atleti's case, it's a case of more bringing in that confidence boost. And in a way, they're both in similar situations. I think they're both in similar situations of what they want to view their season in. But at the same time, it's like, this is how I think it's so early. I think we have to wait a couple more months, a couple more weeks until we see maybe a brighter view of the whole season, and that's where we could probably pinpoint some conclusions and some, you know, theories on what could happen to these teams.
Let me ask you this. Is there let me word this a different way, because I don't think there's any potential for either team to overlook this match, right? I don't want to word it where I think one of them would look past the La Liga match to go to the Champions League. But obviously, Champions League returns October 1st for both of these teams. And Atleti's going to have to travel to Moscow to play Lokomotiv Moscow, the team that is actually leading their group, believe it or not, where Real Madrid is going to go home to the White House to play Club Bruges, a team that is, you know, tied for second. They drew Galatasaray in the opening match of the Champions League. So you would think that Real Madrid have an easier path getting to get Club Bruges to come home as to rather to Atleti going to Moscow. So is there potential that you could see an Atleti start to kind of peer around the corner towards that Lokomotiv match in Champions League? Or do you think that it's all eyes on the Madrid derby coming up on Saturday?
No, I think we have to see what happens here in this Madrid derby and go from there. Mm-hmm. I think that's the more plausible scenario for me, honestly.
I agree too. So, and that matchup, we'll give it to you in the week preview where we'll give you the matches to watch out for this week. Let's move on, Rob. Let's go to another prominent Champions League side, a side that we've already talked about, and that is Manchester City. You know, when you look back on their run of form, obviously currently running in second place in the EPL, I want to say, excuse me, and most recently they had dropped points with a loss to Norwich. You know, we talk about Timo Pukki. We talked about him, recently. Dropping points to Norwich, dropping their first loss of the season. They are currently 5 points behind Liverpool. City come back and just absolutely whitewash Watford in a Manchester City-esque or Pep Guardiola-esque style performance. Goals from David Silva, the aforementioned David Silva. Two goals from Bernardo Silva, Sergio Aguero on a penalty, Riyad Mahrez scoring, Nicolas Otamendi even getting in on the mix. You know, which city are we more inclined to see the rest of the season? The city that struggled against Norwich and losing that match? The city that gave us the 8-0 victory here against Watford? Or is it somewhere in between, Rob? What are your thoughts? And whatever your answer, is that team going to be good enough to catch up, make up the 5 points, and catch Liverpool at this point, who seem to be rolling full steam ahead?
I think what we've been accustomed to, I think, you know, with the City side, let's put it this way, you know, the fact that they have been able to drop points already, like one draw and one loss in comparison to the perfect 6-0 record for Liverpool, you kind of want to think of them more in the middle. I just think that it doesn't seem plausible that a team like Manchester City would be in this scenario. Six games in, you know, we saw the big battle that both teams had in the most part of the last season. Mm-hmm. So for them, this is something that, let's put it this way, I think we will see. I think we know that City are just miles ahead of everyone else.
Yeah.
Maybe to an extent, Liverpool in terms of team, like on paper. Even though Liverpool are ahead, but you know, you look at that depth that they have, and I think heading into their next few games, you know, obviously they have the Carabao Cup tomorrow, but you know, they got Everton in the Premier League, then Zagreb, Wolves, Palace, Atalanta, Villa, Southampton. You know, they don't play Liverpool till November 10th. So,
okay.
Assuming that they don't, you know, mess up there, I think we're going to see a similar City that we saw this weekend. Maybe not to the extent of, you know, whitewashing all their opponents 7-0, but you know, I can see them completely dominating games and winning with authority. That's what I personally think.
Yeah, you know, I think so as well. Like you said, Everton, you know, obviously the Carabao Cup, like we talked about, you're going to see a B side for that. You know, they're going to play Preston in that one. I don't see them fielding anybody of massive substance. Maybe a little mixture here and there to keep players fresh. Then you get Everton on the weekend, like you'd said. I think Everton and team have lost three of their last four matches. I think you'll see typical City there. I think you'll see a handy victory there for them. Then they get Zagreb at home in the Champions League. Zagreb now, of course, winning their first match, beating Atalanta 4-0. This is an opportunity right now to really assert themselves in the group and kind of set their path. So I think Zagreb, you'll see the true medal of Manchester City against them. I think that'll be the next time you really see City, and I wouldn't not expect a 3-0, 4-0 victory in that one for City. Then we come back, we see, we get Wolves, we get at home, we get Crystal Palace. Again, winnable matches. Atalanta, who I expected Rob more of than more from than what we've seen so far opening this season. And then, like you said, you get Villa, you get Southampton, you get Atalanta again, and then you finally get Liverpool City. And then it gets tough because really right after Liverpool City, you get City Chelsea in the Premier League. So when they play, and I'm just counting real quickly here, 1, 3, 5. When they play 5 matches, there'll be 11 matches in, a third of the way through the season for all intents and purposes. If they are still 5 points behind or possibly more, depending on if they slip here or there, that Liverpool match becomes massive. Now, if it's more than 5 points, it's a must-have. For them. And obviously we're talking about something that is 6-7 weeks away, but at the same time, you know, you have to, it gets late early, right? That's what Yogi Berra said. It's getting late early. Well, you know, it's getting late early. 5 points, that margin, if that continues, a draw becomes a success for Liverpool in that match. And then you still continue 5 points ahead as we move forward and move through the season. So I think we will see more of the 8-0 side City than we will of the 3-2 losing side City. But the question is can they maintain it on all fronts? Because obviously the goal is to win trophies, plural, not trophy singular. So we'll have to see where that continues from there. Rob, last thing we want to talk about, FIFA's top 11 came out today. FIFA's player of the year, FIFA's coach of the year. Why don't you give us the 11?
Yeah, sure. So this has been quite. I actually want your take because, you know, yeah. I already gave my take and I think it's probably, let's put it this way, a joke of seeing the best 11. But I will give it to you here. I just had it here and it just closed on me. But give me 1 second. But yeah, just looking at the whole best 11, it's not one for that a lot of people would agree on, but mm-hmm. I'll give you it right here. So obviously the goalkeeper is. Oh, wow. For some reason, I don't have... Hang on, Joe. Give me one second. I almost had it here.
I've got the players, but I don't have the formation.
I'll give you the formation here. Okay. All right, so in goal was obviously Alisson. Alisson, mm-hmm. the goalkeeper for Liverpool. Yeah. The back line was... Wow. Sorry. Okay, here we go. Now, so it was a 4-3-3. We have Alisson in goal. We have Sergio Ramos, Matthias De Ligt, Virgil van Dijk, and Marcelo as your defense. Mm-hmm. In your midfield, you have Frankie de Jong, Eden Hazard, and Luka Modric. And up front, you have Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, and Kylian Mbappe.
And in a 4-4-2, they put Cristiano in the midfield on that one and put mm-hmm. Messi and Mbappe up top. Let's start from the back. Alisson, no argument. Zero argument. Nope. No, not a chance. The back four, De Ligt, Marcelo, Sergio Ramos, Virgil van Dijk. Three central defenders and a wingback. No Trent Alexander-Arnold. You know, that's the one I think is the glaring one for me. This looks to me like it is a heavy, it's a heavy popularity contest, which it truly is. When you think about the votings for, you know, player of the year. I can understand De Ligt, especially given the performance in the Champions League last year. And by that regard, I don't understand Sergio Ramos on this team. I also don't understand Marcelo.
No, I don't. I think when you look at players like you said, Trent Alexander-Arnold,
must have.
Andy Robertson, Khalil Koulibaly, you know, he's had a great season as well. I would put him on my back four.
I would concur, especially, you know, I would probably change the formation to a 3-5-2. And if you want to go De Ligt, Van Dijk and Ramos, okay, I could understand that, but I would go De Ligt, Van Dijk and Koulibaly, like you said. I think that is definitely worth it. Marcelo, I don't think belongs on this team at all. Nope. You know, and I think a guy like Alexander Arnold definitely does. Moving forward to the midfield, Frankie De Jong, Eden Hazard, Luka Modric, Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, the glaring one I think here is, well, I think it's twofold. Luka Modric. You know, once we finished with the 2018 World Cup, you really saw him. I hate to say fall off the pace, but really there's no other way to describe it. He has not been the same player since that 2018 World Cup. I would not put him on here. Frankie de Jong, I completely understand. And by that regard, then I would understand Eden Hazard. I thought he had a fantastic year in the EPL last year. I think that one is okay.
Yeah, won the Europa League as well.
Correct.
But I think looking at that, I probably would have to take Modric out. And if I did, mm-hmm. I'd put a player like Bernardo Silva. who was spectacular for Manchester City and Portugal as well.
Yeah, and definitely has improved and still continuing on that path as well. So I think Bernardo Silva is definitely a good call there. You know, I'm just trying to think myself if there's anybody I would change. I'm trying to think of who. I mean, definitely Modric. I do agree with Bernardo Silva. I'm just right now I'm having, you know, even a guy.
Raheem Sterling.
Sterling, I mean, you put him Sterling in that would midfield. Be one. Even, you know, another Englishman that, you know, didn't perform in Champions League as much because they didn't go as deep, but Jadon Sancho. You know, would be an interesting one to see there. I think they all belong. All these names we're throwing out, I think, belong over Luka Modric at this point, don't you think?
Right. Yeah, 100%.
Okay, so I would change the formation to a 4-3-3 instead of. I think this is the way to do it, is 4-3-3. You want to go with De Jong, Hazard, Modric. I'm sorry, De Jong, De Jong, Hazard, and we're talking, you know, maybe somebody like Bernardo Silva in the midfield.
I put him in there. No, I put him in there, 100%.
Right, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But do it as a 4-3-3, and then the top three: Cristiano Ronaldo, Kylian Mbappe, Leo Messi. Not much argument for me.
Maybe there's one.
Okay,
Sadio Mane.
You know, the problem is that you, and I thought about this with the Liverpool players, they cannibalize each other up top, the top three. Sadio Mane.
But they still create. No, they still score. You have to look at that.
No. They cannibalize each other's votes. Do you see what I'm saying? No one's ever going to go and throw, you know, Mane, Firmino, Salah in the top three and be done with it. You know, do you see what I'm saying?
Hang on. No. Let me get back to that argument because this is Cristiano and Lionel Messi both voted. Because for the awards,
and they voted for Sadio Mane,
the captains of that. No, Messi put Mane first,
right?
And Ronaldo put Mbappe there,
right?
In this top three,
right?
They both voted for Frankie De Jong, and Messi voted for Ronaldo. And Ronaldo's number one was Matthijs De Ligt, which obviously makes sense because he's in that team.
Yeah, well,
but at the same time, you have to make the argument for Mane. I think you have to put him in there. Even Mbappe.
I think Mbappe definitely belongs on the list. I don't think you can deny Kylian Mbappe.
For this season?
For last season.
No. I don't agree.
You got to look and see. I would say, you know what? The one thing I would ask you is how many goals did each score? And I don't know, and I don't have the answer. So
I will check it for you.
So you know, that would be my question, is how many goals did each score? So what you're saying is...
I know he was close. No, he was close. I remember that. I remember he was very close this season.
So what we're saying is we're not arguing Messi-Ronaldo. We're arguing Mbappe.
Even Ronaldo, I mean, yeah, he did win the Nations League, but wasn't he outscored by Quagliarella in Serie A?
Yes, he was. Fabio Quagliarella outscored everybody. That is true.
Yeah. So, obviously, you're not going to put him on the team, but, you know.
He won Nations League.
You put him on it. Yeah, and that's a great argument to put in Silva as well.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And I wasn't arguing Silva with you.
You know? Even then, I mean, I would put Sadio Mane just because of what he produced. And I'm just checking here how many goals he scored. But I think if you win certain times, because obviously, you know, you have like what?
You only have two Liverpool players.
Liverpool players, and they won the Champions League. And it's the goalkeeper and the defender.
Right.
But at the same time, I feel there has to be a bit more from a team that wins. You know, you've seen the past Real Madrid dominate these World 11s when they won the Champions League, Barcelona as well.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. Okay, so Mbappe scored 33 last season.
Okay.
Mane scored, let me just check here.
And again, I also want to say with the caveat that goal scoring, just goals.
22. But
And I still want to give the caveat that just scoring goals does not, you know, does not validate what we're saying. There's more to it than
that. Well, I mean, I think that's another thing,
right,
too.
But what I'm saying, even that, goals and assists doesn't, you know, sometimes with these, I would rather the eyeball test. What did it look like? You know, did it look like Mbappe was a better player than Sadio Mane throughout the year? You know, then these are the kinds of things, regardless of goals and assists. I mean, we want to talk about positioning. You want to talk about the ability to dribble one-on-one. You want to, you know, even the flair goals, whatever. I think there's more to it than goals and assists. I think when you're looking at the striker position or the forward line position, I think that component is going to weigh heavier for people than others. And I'm not arguing that Sadio Mane is not a great player. Please, by any stretch of the imagination. I just think that for me, you know, I look at the team and say, okay, would I replace any of these players with Sadio Mane? And I wouldn't. I wouldn't. And that's, I think for me, that's why I'm saying, you know what? That's right. Where for me, you look at Sergio Ramos on the back line. Would I replace Sergio Ramos? Yes. I would put Kalidou Koulibaly all day long. Would I replace Luka Modric? Yes. I'd put Bernardo Silva all day long. Do you see what I'm saying? And it's not about goals and assists. It's about quality of player and what they gave you throughout the season. And that's why I look at these three and say, no, I wouldn't put Sadio Mane in place of them. And again, it's opinion. It's a popularity contest, right, Rob? you know, but it's just, and it, ultimately it's opinion. And
well, I mean, popularity in the extent that the coaches, the captain, and media are voting
right
for these players.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure all 200 nations view, I'm sure they all view soccer differently than what we do. And view it in the extent of, and they have, and they all have their opinion. They have their criteria of what is a good player. Why they should be on this team. You know, it could be the eye test, as you said. It can be what he provided in the season, stats wise, just, you know, collectively from an honors perspective. It's all different for each person.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I feel as if, for me, my opinion, if you want to put in appealing as well, and also what you bring into trophies, let's put it this way. I think with Liverpool, you could make the argument as well, but for City as well, I think there should be the extent of a team that won three trophies in a single year.
Right.
Have at least one player on that team.
Sure.
To not have one player?
It's crazy.
I mean, that seems ridiculous. Yeah, it is.
I agree. I think going back to the Mane versus Ronaldo, Mbappe, Messi question, I think what we should do is develop some kind of poll question and put it on our Twitter page. I think that's what we'll do. What do you think?
Yeah.
Let's do it. All right, so we'll figure something out. We'll get a poll up there, and then next week we'll put it up on the show. We'll read the results. So, Rob, with everything off the docket.
No, well, let's go back here. It's the other awards, and then I guess
I'm sorry, please
give our opinions of who won everything.
Yeah.
You know, that's all right. Obviously, you know, you know, World 11, our best goalkeeper in the world, Alisson.
Yeah. I mean, no argument.
No debate there. Nope. Best manager in the world, Jurgen Klopp.
No argument, really.
For the women's team awards, Megan Rapinoe, best women's player.
How do you argue with that one?
I can't.
Exactly.
And then the best player in the world, according to FIFA, Lionel Messi. Which, for me, I was surprised. Because after seeing what we saw in the UEFA best awards, I was surprised that Messi was going to win this one. I mean, yes, there is that. In a way, you also go back at what you provide,
mm-hmm.
and also what looks appealing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't go wrong with Messi being more appealing than what Van Dijk is, with all due respect to him being a defender. And you have Ronaldo there.
I'll answer your question by giving you this, I'll respond to your statement by giving you this. And we talked about it with Amadi when we had him on the show. We talked about the 2-2 match, right? We talked about the 6-2 match for Salzburg, right? One of the matches we didn't talk about that we probably should have really gotten deeper into was Dortmund-Barca. Why? 0-0. You know why?
Yep.
Goals sell. And in this instance, you know, I mean, and again, please, Van Dijk had one of the best seasons of any defender we've ever seen, okay? I mean, he truly did.
Yeah.
But goals sell. Messi scored, what I believe, 55 goals last year across all competitions, and it was
it was
some ridiculous thing. Also, I was doing the old Messi search on Twitter, and there was some. Oh, you know what? I have it right here. Give me one second.
51.
Okay, I have it here. There was a set of stats that got sent over, and I wanted to make sure that I had it here. So, Leo Messi, in 2018-2019 season, he was Europe's top scorer. He was Barca's top scorer. He was the Champions League top scorer. He was La Liga's top scorer. He was Barca's top assist man. Most La Liga Man of the Match awards. Most Champions League Man of the Match awards. Most chances created. Most goals. Most goal contributions in the top five leagues as well. This is from Barca Addict. So, again, take this with a grain of salt. You know, there's also all other kinds of stupid ones, like most hat tricks, most braces, top score versus top EPL teams, which, like, really, does that have to be a stat? You know, so, and then there's also, you know, opinion ones, but he won the Pichichi, of course. So there's all of that going into it. And I get what Virgil van Dijk did. And I get Virgil van Dijk and the 10 players on the pitch with him won the Champions League, and the coach that was with him won the Champions League. But I think when you look at player of the year, I find it hard to argue with Lionel Messi for the year he had last year. And I think sometimes Leo, and I think we've said this before, Leo's a victim of his own success. you know what I mean? Where he's so good, you're like, wow, Leo, 50 goals? What was wrong? You know, that's the kind of thing. Geez, Leo, why'd you only score 50?
I mean, from a guy that ended up, and I understand what you're saying, you know, this guy scored 54, 60, 73 in a season.
Yeah, so you had an off year, right? I mean, that's what people will say, but you're like, my God, how many goals you got to score to not have an off year? And so I think sometimes when you look at these polls and these awards, a lot of times Leo is held to a higher standard because he's a victim of his own success. Ronaldo the same way. Cristiano Ronaldo the exact same way. Victim of his own success, held to a higher standard. Where I don't think Virgil van Dijk, I don't think is such a victim, because, you know, he can have a great season, but a lot of people don't notice it because goals sell.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the case of what's going to happen with Kylian Mbappe. I mean, let's be real. I think he is the prime favorite to win a Ballon d'Or or be the best player in the world once Messi and Ronaldo are done with their stuff.
Sure.
And, you know, he's 20 years old. He turns 21 in December. We might need to start thinking of him in terms of what kind of regard he has, because, you know, he's won the World Cup, but he needs to – now you expect more of him.
Well,
he returns to Champions League. In a way, you're a victim of your own success.
Yeah, but he returns to Champions League to PSG, then what?
Then you try a bigger challenge.
Exactly.
You go to Real Madrid. You go there. Yeah, you go to the Premier League. You go and win there.
Shut up,
because
Rob.
Shut up,
Rob. He's going to Juve. Stop.
I'm sure.
Hey, it worked for me with De Ligt, right? It worked for me.
This guy is twice as more as what the lick was going for.
I know.
Good luck.
I know it. So, all right, man. Let's look at the matches ahead coming up this week. And also, you know, keep in mind for everyone, we have midweek matches in the Serie A. We have midweek matches Ligue 1, La Liga, and MLS. And MLS is going to become front and center for us on next week's show. This Wednesday, Serie A, a big one, Inter-Lazio, Wednesday at 3 p.m. Also, my best friend is going to be at the match, so that's pretty cool. I'll get a firsthand look at the stadium. On Wednesday, also 7 p.m., NYCFC and Atlanta United face off a battle of top two teams in the Eastern Conference for MLS. On Saturday, Bundesliga, Leipzig and Schalke face off at 9:30 a.m. on Saturday. That's going to be a great one. And the big one, probably the biggest match of the week, the Madrid derby, Atleti, Real Madrid, Saturday, 3 p.m. That is definitely must-see TV. And then on Sunday, Marseille-Rennes at 3 p.m. We'll close out with a Monday matchup in the Premier League where Manchester United welcomes in Arsenal, 3 p.m. on that one. That'll be one to watch as well. So, Rob, I'm going to go back, and I lost my trivia question here, so I'm going to go back and call it back up. But Gilt Edge Soccer Marketing had a tweet. The highest-selling jerseys in the United States between February 1st and August 7th. Can you give me the 10 teams and home or away?
All right, so you said that there were two teams that have multiple appearances on this top 10.
That is correct.
So let me give you those teams first and before going off with the other teams. My guess is Barcelona is one of the teams.
Barcelona is there. They are sixth. Their home jersey for 1920.
Okay, and I would assume it's their away kit as well.
They are not one of the repeat teams.
No, you said that they are.
No. I was telling you certain teams were. I didn't tell you who they were.
Okay, so in this case, I'll give you another one. I'll put Real Madrid on that list.
Real Madrid is number 10, their home jersey.
Home jersey. Obviously, we'll keep it with the trend of the best awards, I guess. We could put Liverpool on there.
Liverpool is on there as the third jersey on the list, their home kit for 1920.
Okay. None of these teams are repeated, by the way, is what I'm hearing.
And this one to make sure, no, none of those teams are repeated. The fact
okay,
that
so
two
if,
teams,
I, if I give you the team.
The two teams that are repeated are national teams.
Oh, okay. Well, in this case, Mexico, 100%.
Mexico's home jersey is number one.
Yeah, makes sense. 100%. I guess Brazil?
Brazil is not on the list.
USA.
USA is on there, but there are multiple spots. So if you can give me some jerseys, I'll tell you. And this is the really hard part of the question.
The women's home kit?
The women's home kit is number four on the list.
I would assume the women's away kit?
The away kit is number two.
Mm-hmm. Is any of the men's shirt in there?
The men are on here.
All right, so I'll put them there as well.
Which one?
Home, I guess.
All right, I gave you a terrible clue because I guess in reality there's three repeats. The U.S. men's home jersey is number seven.
Okay, the away jersey.
Yes, and the U.S. men's away jersey is number five.
Okay, I'm assuming those are all the national team kits.
Those are. Let me see. You're missing a national team kit. You're missing.
I would assume the Mexico away kit.
The Mexico away kit is number nine.
All right, so I guess I'll go back to club.
You've got one more team. It is a club team. It is eighth on this list.
Manchester United.
Home or away?
Home.
The Manchester United home jersey is number eight on this list. So, to recap, I'll go from 10 to 1. Number 10, Real Madrid's home jersey is number 10. Mexico's away jersey, number 9. Man United's home jersey, number 8. U.S. women's national team home jersey. I'm sorry. U.S. men's national team home jersey is number 7. Barcelona's home jersey, number 6. U.S. men's national team away jersey, number 5. U.S. women's national team jersey home jersey is number 4. Liverpool's home jersey, number 3. The U.S. women's away jersey, number 2. And the Mexican national team home jersey is the number one selling jersey in the United States from February 1st to August 7th. Your trivia question for the evening.
How about that, Joe? A different national team's kit is more successful and more marketable than our own.
But we have
both home men in a way.
But we have to hire an English speaking coach, something like that. So without any further ado, my friend, let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right. And so for episode 255 of Low Limit Football, special thanks to Amadi Tiam again for joining us. Next week, Rob, we have a massive show planned. We're going to have Copa Libertadores semifinals, the Super Classico in that one. We're going to look at MLS's final week as they get ready to set their places for the playoffs. And we're going to look into the Champions League as they get set to start match day 2. So, for episode 255 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.